Ironheart saw that the warriors next to Koira were being hurled through the air.
Holy forge fire! One of the invisible enemies must be approaching the Mega.
Lot Ionen was still immersed in fabricating his spell as she stopped what she was doing and sprang aside with a shout. Ironheart ran over to defend Koira, puzzling over how he could make their opponents visible again. The battle raged around them, the warriors desperately trying to defend themselves against their invisible adversaries, but only succeeding in laying a few of them low. Hard to locate, and harder still to fight. Worse still, it took an incredible number of blows to bring them down. As well as their invisibility, they had their armor and shields for protection. Ironheart had lost sight of Tungdil while trying to help the Mega. Koira possessed the power to defend herself, but was retreating from the fray, shrieking in terror. Hers was no warrior spirit. Lot Ionen, meanwhile, had sent his magic force against the fallen master. The rays were met once again by a freshly erected barrier. Flames licked around the sides of a bright red dome before dying out.
"Stupid fool! See what you've done through your cowardice!"
The Magus cursed Koira, who had tripped over the hem of her dress, tumbling to the boggy ground. The accident fortuitously saved her from the invisible sweep of the scythes, for to her right and left, dwarves were felled mercilessly, injured and mutilated. Blood and severed limbs abounded. Ironheart had almost reached her, but could not believe how Lot Ionen was behaving, ignoring Koira instead of helping her up. He was making for the magic barrier behind which Tungdil's former master was already pulling the crossbow bolt out of his head. The wound closed up as soon as the tip of the bolt had left the skull, and he jumped to his feet as if nothing had happened. He could not be slain with ordinary weapons.
"Rakus, we need your assistance!"
Ironheart saw more dwarves cut to ribbons while others plunged frantically into the swamp. Blood and mud splashed up. He stared at the ground and noted the huge footprints of his opponents.
"I've got you,"
he growled, taking a running leap to aim a blow at where he supposed the creature's neck to be. He brought down the crow's beak with all his might. The spike shattered something, and a loud cry rang out. Thudding into metal, the dwarf held on to the shaft of his weapon as firmly as he could while his adversary bucked and tossed under him, like an unbroken horse trying to throw off a rider. But Ironheart was having none of that. Refusing to loosen his grip, he hung suspended with his feet a pace and a half above the ground, swinging wildly and cackling with laughter.
"Rear and buck all you like! It's no use! You won't get rid of me!"
He quickly drew his knife out with one hand, clamping it between his teeth. Then he pulled himself up with both hands along the shaft of his crow's beak until he reached the axe head, then plunged his knife into the wound until the blood ran free.
"How do you like that, long legs?"
he growled, rootling around in the flesh until he got through to a bone, where he anchored the knife.
"Off to Teon with you!"
Ironheart clung onto the dagger in order to gain leverage to extract the crow's beak, which he wielded in an upward swing. There was a clang as the spike met and pierced metal. The bucking motion ceased, and the dwarf was pitched forward and down as the invisible warrior crashed down at Koira's feet. Ironheart picked himself up and stood on the creature's neck, hands around the crow's beak.
"Ho! That was none too easy,"
he called out to the Mega, as he pulled his weapon out of the body of the fallen foe. Visible now in death, its enormous dimensions could be fully seen. Ironheart stepped over the head and hopped down to where the Mega was standing on the soft ground.
"Gudligard needs you,"
he urged her, proffering his bloodied, gloved hand.
"Get over your fear, and concentrate on your magic powers or things will end badly."
He pointed to the barrier.
"Help Lot Ionen!"
Koira's eyes fluttered. She was in a panic, not even daring to grasp the dwarf's hand.
"I can't," she whispered. "I'm too frightened."
With a hissing sound, the swamp started to boil and bubble. Jets spurted up 20 paces high all over the battlefield, deluging the warriors. The impact knocked many of them over, and the soft mud covered their armor, helmets, eyes. It also covered the invisible giant hordes. The coat of dirt made them instantly detectable, and the dwarves made immediate use of this fact.
"That will have been Golder's work," thought Ironheart, proud as could be.
Coira was still staring at him blankly, refusing to budge. So he turned and ran to the barrier.
"Stupid human woman!"
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Balindar, Tungdil, and Lotionen hurrying over to her. Ironheart grinned. The quartet would surely prove too much for the dwarf in the posh armor.
"You've been a master. Now you'll be an ex-master," he smirked.
One by one, they too arrived at the barrier, through which they spied the master and the last of his followers.
"Go on,"
Ironheart urged the Magus.
"Get the barrier down, so we can do for him."
Lotionen paid no attention. His fingers were making shapes in the air. Tungdil stepped up to the barrier and banged on it with Bloodthirster. It pinged like glass.
"Our duel is not yet over. Your fighters are being defeated, as you can see. Would it not spur you on to see me dead, even if you have lost them all?"
"He who bears many names," the nearest enemy fighter spoke up, "announces that the battle is not over. But until then..."
And suddenly the barrier moved to encompass Tungdil, locking him in.
"He will fight you and punish you."
Then he lifted his black bugle and blew a blast on it. Numerous holes in the instrument allowed him to play a range of notes as if on a flute.
"No!"
called Ironheart, smashing his crow's beak into the shield. It hummed, but did not disintegrate.
"Let me in!"
Balindar grabbed him by the shoulder and forced him to look at the ravine.
"What do we do now?"
Ironheart pulled himself out of Balindar's grip.
"Don't you touch me!"
Then he noticed what all the others were staring at. Another Cordrian had appeared in the cleft. The head was smaller than the fully grown version, but then one head after another popped up. The beast revealed itself to the armies of Girdlegard.
"A Cordrian with 4 heads, groaned Ironheart.
Tungdil had taken up the fight with his former master, while the shimmering protective shield expanded in size once more. The dwarves and Lotionen had to step back. Ironheart cursed and looked at the Magus, who was still casting spells but having no success on his own.
"Golder!" he called. "Golder, we need you!"
"Disappear!"
Balindar struck the magic hemisphere, but Keenfire had no effect. It bounced off and nearly injured its owner with the spike. The giant bugler sounded another range of notes and, in response, the Cordrian hissed and charged the nearest Ubariu soldiers, breathing a sea of white fire over them. Spewing out flames in 3 directions at once, the 4-headed creature was inflicting carnage on the troops. At a further signal, it unfolded its wings, took off, and landed in the very heart of the Ubariu, crushing many of the valiant warriors. 2 of the creature's heads snapped and bit at them, while the other 2 sent out the deadly white fire.
"Come on, wizard!"
Ironheart bellowed at Lotionen.
"We need to get that trumpet thing!"
Meanwhile, the bout between Tungdil and his master was progressing. They were well matched. Neither was gaining the upper hand, each succeeding in inflicting cuts and dents on the armor of the other. The runes stayed still. Ironheart did not know why. Goda turned up, breathing heavily.
"I can only do 1 last spell," she admitted. "And that's just the one I need,"
said Lot Ionan, facing forward without even glancing at her.
"Do you know the Seriphani words?"
"Remember you taught me that one shortly before I quit," she replied. "It is not good magic."
"That doesn't matter," Ironheart fumed at her. "Not now, Goda. Help him to break down the barrier, or the Cordrian will destroy one army after another."
He waved his weapon, noticing how the blood had dried on it. The dwarf woman was obviously extremely reluctant, but she stepped up next to her former mentor and put her left hand in his right. Each of them pointed at the barrier with the forefinger of their free hand, then shut their eyes. At that moment, Tungdil was stunned by a hammer blow to the head that hurled him right over to the edge of the barrier, barely a hand's breadth away from Ironheart. His helmet had fallen off, and blood was coursing down from a cut on the forehead.
"What?"
Eyes wide in horror, Ironheart stared at his friend's face. It was covered in black lines, just like an enraged elf, the lines spreading out from the golden eye patch. Ironheart half expected the whole face to shatter into pieces like broken pottery. Tungdil shook himself and warded off the next blow, striking the master in the face with the jagged edge of Bloodthirster. The sharp tips stabbed through the skin to the bone beneath, lodging fast. The dwarf in the Vrakasium armor hit out blindly, and Tungdil grabbed his hand, broke the wrist, and snatched the hammer. Then he swerved aside, smashing it down on Bloodthirster's blade. He drove the sharpened tips further into his opponent's face. The master fell on his back and tried to crawl away from Tungdil, blood pouring from the neck wound and staining the ground. A further signal was sounded on the enemy bugle. Dropping its pursuit of the decimated Ubariu, the four-headed Cordrian launched itself onto the group of humans, wings flapping. They did not even try to offer resistance, but took flight at once. The catapults on the battlements had started up. Losses among their own troops, should shots go astray, were regrettable, but a four-headed Cordrian could not be allowed to survive. Clouds of arrows and spears darkened the battlefield as battle raged against the beast. Ironheart paid no attention to the battle. He wanted to be with his friend, and it was his friend under the magic dome. "I have to get in there." The final monster warrior drew his sword, about to intercede in the duel. Tungdil kept his cool and raised the hammer. With all his might, he slammed the hammer down once, twice, three times, onto Bloodthirster, driving the blade right through the skull of the convulsing enemy until the head was split in two. The sharp movements of arms and legs ceased. The limbs flopped back and were still. The Famulus had taken the life of his master.
"Huzzah!" yelled Ironheart beside himself. "He's done it!"
Smiling grimly, Tungdil pulled Bloodthirster out of the carcass and aimed the tip of it at the final enemy, whose approaching steps were slowing now. A loud, high sound, like a storm whistling through a canyon, reverberated around them, and the barrier flickered and disappeared.
"Scholar! Leave long legs to me!"
bellowed Ironheart, charging with his weapon raised high at the enemy. The monster, having been unable to save his leader's life, raised the fateful bugle to his lips once more, forcing Ironheart to an action dwarves only contemplate if they are carrying a second weapon on their person. He hurled the crow's beak. The weapon hummed across toward the opponent, its spikes striking him just as he was about to sound the first note, penetrating his helmet and destroying his brain. The giant fell, bugle clattering to the ground and bursting into tiny pieces.
"Ha!"
rejoiced Ironheart, fists in the air as he turned toward his friends.
"Did you see that?"
His jaw dropped. Goda had sunk to her knees in front of Lot Ionan. Their hands were still joined. She was convulsed in pain, her face a grimace, and her breath coming in rapid gasps. Lot Ionan's other arm was pointing forward, with a lilac ball of energy floating above his palm, emitting rays of light in sudden jets. Then the color turned to deep green.
"I knew the dwarfs would be able to manage without me," he said, laughing. "I saved my magic for now."
Balindar was about to fall on the Magus, but suddenly all the discarded weapons rose up out of the swamp and aimed themselves at him.
"Nobody comes near me unless I permit them to."
Lot Ionan looked at the Cordrian.
"A useful animal. It is keeping the army occupied for me, so I'll have less killing to do before I go back to Girdlegard. My dream of reigning supreme is coming true."
He made a bow to Tungdil.
"Thanks to you, foster son. Without you, I should never have achieved all this."
"There you are," Balindar crowed. "He is a traitor."
"No, quite the opposite," continued the Magus.
Lightning flashed out of the sphere, hitting Tungdil's armor. Not a single rune shimmered in defensive warning. The energy struck his breast and hurled him backwards, where he fell next to the corpse of his former master.
"He meant what he said. Only I don't hold with making bargains and pacts with creatures who are not worthy of my discourse. However, he gave me the opportunity to concern myself more closely with the protective spells on the armor."
Lot Ionan smirked.
"Very helpfully." "I'm going to cut you right out of your stupid hood."
Ihart took a threatening step forward.
"Take one more step, and your wife will be blown into tiny pieces,"
the Magus warned him calmly. Ihart stopped short.
"What are you waiting for, then? Why don't you go ahead and kill us both now?"
"I may need you again."
Lot Ionan followed the Cordrian's movements as it rampaged through the undergroundling's ranks, killing its victims with swift bites.
"On the other hand, it should be sufficient if I just have you stuffed."
The swords, floating in front of Balindar, advanced. He managed to deflect three blades, but then the next ones dug into his flesh, stabbing him in the body, arms and legs. Only neck and head remained whole. He tipped over into the swamp, moaning, and lost consciousness.
"Enough!"
thundered a clear voice.
"I can stop you, Lot Ionan! Your days as an insane Magus are over at last!"
Ihart was flabbergasted to see Rodario on the battlefield. In his right hand he was holding a smoke diamond, the very smoke diamond Ihart had once handed back to Tungdil after it had been dropped in Evildam.
"This artifact will seal your destruction."
The actor spoke clearly, enunciating his words and projecting his voice as if this were the climax of a tragedy on stage. As he approached the small group, he said,
"I know its power and shall use it without a second thought, no matter how you may have served us in the past."
He held the stone out in front of himself as if it were a shield. Lot Ionan raised his eyebrows, then laughed outright.
"An actor, am I right? Looks like Rodario and talks like him. An excellent performance, but completely useless."
He sent a magic beam that focused precisely on the stone. The smoke diamond flared up in Rodario's fingers and crumbled instantly to black powder.
"By Samusin, I could have sworn it was going to be really important,"
said a disappointed Rodario.
"No, it wasn't," gloated the Magus. "Let us bring this to an end before—"
Half a dozen red flashes shot out, crackling behind him. Lot Ionan was forced forward and stumbled over Goda. She tore herself free and drew her dagger to stab the Magus in the throat, but his sphere of energy halted her action by thrusting itself against her forehead. She collapsed without a word.
Coda!
Eyeheart raced forward, forgetting that his crow's beak was still stuck in the enemy he had been fighting. Covered in filth, Coria was less than 10 paces away from them, waving her hands for another spell. Finally, she had been able to overcome her paralyzing terror. Lotionen stayed on his knees, also working on a spell. There was a humming sound, and a crossbow bolt slammed through the Magus's back, into his heart. Slynn had scored once more, but Lotionen was still alive. The danger that he might loose a final violent magic strike still remaining. Shrieking with fury, Eyeheart raced over, snatching up Keenfire as he passed. Whirling it above his head, he followed through with a horizontal blow to Lotionen's throat. A sparkling trail appeared in the axe head's wake, and a wave of heat wafted back to the dwarf, and then he hit home. The sharply polished diamonds cleaved the wizard's neck, so that the head flew off in a wide arc. The torso fell to one side and landed in the dirt, stump side down.
"Rakus!"
cried Eyeheart with a gasp, not quite able to take in the significance of his heroic deed. He stared at Lotionen's head and saw that the lips were still moving and a smile had appeared on the features. Then the eyes rolled up into the skull, and the sheen of life was extinguished.
What did he?
Tungdil was suddenly at his side. There was no evidence now in his countenance of those horrific black lines.
Break him open!
He demanded through clenched teeth, his right hand clutching the hole in his own breastplate armor.
Didn't you hear me?
When the astonished dwarf failed to react, Tungdil grabbed the dagger and brutally slit the dead man's body from top to bottom. A green glow flared in the carcass, getting steadily stronger and making the red flesh transparent. Smoke curled up with a smell of burning.
By all the infamous ones!
Tungdil searched in the steaming guts, arms up to his elbows covered in blood. Then his fist closed and he pulled something out, together with a handful of flesh. Eyeheart could hear hissing inside the gauntleted grip, like the sound of water sizzling on a red-hot stove.
What by Vrakus is that?
It's the fragment of malachite,
his friend replied briskly as he got to his feet.
All of you, run to the fortress,
he commanded as he charged off to the ravine.
What? Why, scholar, why? Run as far and fast as you can,
shouted Tungdil, charging on down the path to the abyss until he was swallowed up in the shadows. Eyeheart attempted to help goad her up, but she did not move, so he threw her across his shoulder.
Hey, there, Actor! Go and get Balindar!
He snatched his bugle from his belt and gave the dwarves the signal to retreat. Coira watched the ravine in disbelief.
He has made fools of all of us.
What do you mean?
Said Eyeheart, looking at the Cordrian, which, though weighed down by a mass of spears and arrows, was still continuing to wreak havoc on the troops in its vicinity. Spreading its wings, it climbed the rocks of the Black Abyss, then slid down in an attempt to launch itself into the air above the plain. There seemed no way for them to prevent its escape.
He has taken the force of the Magus with him,
the Mager gulped.
There was immense power in that crystal splinter. That was how Lotionen was able to store up all his magic.
Meanwhile, Rodario had hauled Balindar out of the swamp and tossed him onto his shoulder like a sack of flour.
You lot in your armor, he complained. It just adds to the weight.
The dwarf army obeyed Eyeheart's clarion call, and the remaining soldiers retreated from the field of battle.
Yes, but what's he going to do with it?
Protested Boindil, in defense of his friend, countering the queen's accusations.
He has surely proved he is on our side.
Before Koira could reply, there was an enormous crash in the black abyss, followed by a quaking of the earth that threw them all off their feet. Then came the explosion. Iahart twisted round to see what was happening. Parts of the fortress had collapsed, with great wall sections falling down, taking the men on the battlements to their doom. The chasm was suffused with a ghostly dark green incandescent glow. A broad beam shot up vertically toward the sky, and then a second detonation occurred, lifting rocks around the ravine's edges. Finally, the earth subsided, bringing the cliffs down with it. It all happened so quickly that the Cordrian had not been able to reach a safe distance. As it flapped wildly to get away, it was struck by hurtling debris that half buried it. It disappeared with a screech into the collapsing ravine, turning to ash when it came into contact with the glare. A third explosion hurled molten rock into the air. It spattered as far as the fleeing armies, creating new victims. Smoke and steam rose up, obscuring the view. The battlefield was silent now.
No!
Iahart stared into the veil of steam and dirt.
Koira, can you get rid of this fog? I have to know what's happening.
He stood up, groaning, and laid Goda down on her cloak. She was still breathing, so he was less concerned about her than about the welfare of his friend. The Maegar did what he had requested, and called up a mild breeze to waft away the curtain, even though clouds of dirt and steam still persisted. The black abyss had gone. Lava bubbled in its place, the black heartblood of the mountains sealing up the chasm. Evildam had lost a good third of its walls and, as far as he could make out through the smoke, only a few of the human and Ubaria warriors were still alive. The dwarf fighters, men and women alike, had done better than the others because the Cordrian had never reached their ranks.
"He has made the ultimate sacrifice," he muttered gruffly. "The scholar knew what would happen and gave his life for us."
Tears filled his eyes.
"Rakkus, you have admitted the greatest of your heroes to your eternal forge today."
"There!" cried Rodario with a happy laugh. "Can you see what I see?"
Iahart glanced to the left and gave a shout of joy. Through the smoke and ash, a dwarf came swaying and stumbling, clad in battered Tionium. He was using Bloodthirster as a crutch and limping over toward them.
"Scholar!" Iahart rejoiced. "Oh, Vrakus, if I ever strike it rich, I'll offer all my wealth at your shrine. It'll be worth it. Worth it 1,000 times over."
The armies on the plain and fortress walls had seen Tungdil. The chorus of voices cheering their hero was louder than any shouts of joy Iahart had heard before. He wept with emotion. Tungdil was badly burned. Lava had cooled and hardened on his chest, and blood was pouring from a gaping wound in his side. But still, he had walked, smiling, out of the inferno, and was now waving to the humans, the Ubariu, the undergroundlings, and his own folk.
"That's my scholar," sobbed Iahart.
"I knew we'd do it," said Slynn, shaking hands with Iahart. "A good job we trusted him."
The dwarves, injured or otherwise, sank to their knees before the High King. Even Iahart and Slynn, who was putting a new bolt in his bow to be on the safe side, bowed to show respect. The wave spread. Humans, elves, Ubariu, and undergroundlings bowed before Tungdil Goldhand as the trumpets blared. Tungdil walked steadily onward until he had nearly reached his friend.
"I knew it."
Iahart was the first to get to his feet, intending to give Tungdil a hearty embrace, High King or no. Suddenly, Kiras sprang past him, and he felt a jerk at his arm as she raced toward the scholar. He realized too late that the undergroundling had grabbed Keenfire out of his grasp.
"This is not Tongdil Goldhand! This weapon can't be fooled like you can!" Kirash shrieked, holding the legendary axe in both hands. "See how the diamonds sparkle? What more proof do we need?" She delivered a strike. Slynn uttered a curse and lifted his weapon, aiming and firing in one smooth movement. The bolt struck Kiras from behind, finding her heart, but at the same time the axe sliced through the Tionium armor, through the ribs, and into Tungdil's heart. They fell, dying into each other's arms, to sink into the swamp. The trumpeting stopped abruptly, and a mass cry of horror resounded on all sides.
"No!"
Ironheart ran up. He dragged the undergroundling's body off Tungdil, levered Keenfire out of the wound and surveyed the horrific injury, which was pouring blood. A conventional healer would be unable to do anything at all.
"Koira!"
he yelled, beside himself. "Come here and save him, Mega!" She stepped forward slowly and shook her head sorrowfully. With a voice thick with tears, she said,
"I can't. I have nothing left. I've used it all to produce the wind you asked for."
Ironheart lifted his friend's head and washed away the mud from his face using water from his drinking pouch.
"This must not be allowed to happen, ye gods!" he shouted. "You cannot let the hero of Gurdlikard and the Outer Lands die!" "It was not Tungdil,"
breathed Kiras, contorting her body and moaning.
"The gems on the axe! I had to do it!"
Her eyes dimmed.
"It was him!"
cried Ironheart, staring at Keenfire. The diamonds were still glowing, but Boindil knew that the cause was him, a result of the elf curse, not Tungdil.
"It was him,"
he echoed quietly, weeping at the death of his friend. Goda opened her eyes. She had heard everything and had only pretended to be in a swoon so that her husband would not be able to demand that she save the creature's life. When she sat up, she noticed something sparkling in the cuff of her sleeve. She reached and pulled out the last of the lost diamond splinters. It had been with her all along. Goda saw Ironheart hunched over the corpse of the dead dwarf. It would have been so easy for her to keep him alive. Epilogue. The Outer Lands, the Black Abyss, early summer, 6492nd solar cycle. Hargerin Deathbringer looked at the sixth of the Vrakasium caskets, the one that had the Thirdling runes embossed on the side. Inside was some of Tungdil Goldhand's ashes from the extremely moving cremation ceremony. In a departure from normal dwarf tradition, the tribes and freeling dwarves had each been given a commemorative portion of the ashes of this, the mightiest and most worthy dwarf high king who had ever lived, so that they could conserve and honour his memory in their own land. This was the agreement the kings and queens had reached. Ironheart pushed the box over the table to him, then handed the others to Zamtor, to Belindis, who had now recovered from her fever, to Frandibar, and to Gordislan the Younger, from the Freeling City. He did not touch the last box, which had the sign of the Secondlings on it. They had all gathered in the assembly hall of the fortress round a small table to discuss what had happened and what the immediate future might hold for the children of the smith. All those present were distraught at the recent death of their hero, and the atmosphere was distinctly gloomy. Hargerin looked at the others, then slid the little casket back to Ironheart.
"They have chosen you as their king. It is yours. Take it with you to the Blue Mountains and put up a worthy monument to your friend."
Ironheart looked at the box. Part of him was still refusing to accept the idea that the scholar was now dead.
Another part of him embraced the notion that it had not been Tungdil, but his doppelganger, who had died. And the third and strongest part of him knew who it was they had committed to the fire, while the trumpets had sounded, the dwarf choirs had sung, and prayers to Vrakus had been spoken. Belindis told them all that it had indeed been Tungdil. Ireheart's inner being had told him the same thing.
I should have listened to my own feelings right from the beginning.
He had allowed himself to be influenced by those like Goda and Kiras, who had been led astray. There were still those among the tribes who were secretly waiting for Tungdil's return.
I know better.
He stretched his hand out slowly and placed his fingers on the reddish golden metal.
I shall do that, Hagarin.
He took a long breath.
I shall leave soon, together with those of my tribe who had fled to the Freelings. We will put things to rights, and will clear the last of the Black Eyes' corpses from the tunnels.
Belindis gave him an encouraging smile.
You will be more than capable, Boindil. I know from our previous acquaintance that you always love a challenge.
Ireheart gave a faint grin in response.
Let's hope Vrakus is listening, Queen Belindis.
We still have to settle the matter of appointing our next High King, said Frandibar thoughtfully.
Let's leave that question open for the next 20 cycles, suggested Xamtor. I don't think it would be fitting to choose a replacement for Tungdil Goldhand in a rush. Let the throne remain empty for now. We shall see who proves worthy of the high office of supreme leader of all the dwarf tribes.
If it were up to me, Hagarin said, indicating Boindil, it would be him.
Ireheart raised his hand, rejecting the honour.
I thank you for your nomination, but I should not want to accept the title. Xamtor's suggestion is the best. Let us meet once a cycle and report what occurs in each of our dwarf realms. In 20 cycles' time, we will summon the clan leaders and let them decide.
His speech was greeted with applause. Frandibar looked at the model of the Black Abyss, which still showed the rocks and fortress.
Evil Dam will be left in the care of the Ubariu and the Undergroundlings, Boindil.
Yes. There is no reason to hold on to the fortress or repair it. They can let the fortress decay, or use the materials to build something else. I heard talk about erecting a statue to Tungdil's memory.
He consulted the lined faces round him.
Is there anything else we need to discuss?
Nobody had any new issues to bring to the table, and so the assembly broke up, with the delegates taking leave of each other before making their way back to their own realms. Frandibar would have the shortest journey, Xamtor the longest. Ireheart strolled off through Evil Dam, the casket under his arm. He was deep in thought. Cracks had appeared on all the walls. It was time for the rest of the garrison to leave. Other parts of the building were threatening to cave in, despite the engineering supports hurriedly put in place. The last Zadar suddenly stood in front of him, with a demonic grin, as if he had been spat out by the darkness.
Are you off home?
Ireheart contemplated the dark armour that the dwarf, who called himself Balodil, had never taken off.
Yes. What about you? You are a thirdling.
He denied it vehemently.
No. I'm a Zadar, created by the Alphar, and I want to hunt them down until I've smoked the last of them out of their hidey-holes.
Aferton was going to take that on. If you're going to do it, at least take a party of the former Black Squadron along under your command.
Aferton would never be able to find them all. I know their secrets, but he doesn't. They tricked their own Emperor. He seems keen to forget that. I'll go alone. The Thirdlings are good fighters, but they're not the right ones to hunt down the Alphar.
Balodil took his flask off his belt.
This is for you.
Ireheart stared at the gift and reached out for it.
But I thought you needed yourself.
He looked around carefully to see if he could be observed. The Sirdar chuckled, then barked like a dog, though he soon seemed quite normal again.
I can make my own stuff, he leaned forward.
From Alpha blood,
he said in a voice as deep as a well.
I squash them all like you squeeze fruit to get the juice out.
He ran his tongue over his lips, and his eyes glittered. Ironheart could not deny that he found Balladil weird.
What will you do after you found them all?
He shrugged his shoulders and puffed out the air in his lungs, looking like a dwarf child being told off by its mother.
This and that. Perhaps I'll go to the Freelings, perhaps I'll leave Girdlegard, perhaps I'll jump off a cliff.
He gurgled and rubbed his beard.
Or perhaps I'll go to the Outer Lands and look for an army to invade Girdlegard with.
He watched Ironheart's face carefully.
Well? You wouldn't do that.
Ironheart studied him.
You know there are too many heroes who can stop you.
Now Ironheart bent forward.
And I know your weak point. Tungdil's son could never destroy his own father's inheritance.
Balladil jerked back and gave a malicious laugh.
No! I was never his son. I picked up the story and liked the idea of joking around with a name.
He giggled again.
It fooled you, didn't it?
Nearly,
Boindel admitted, relieved.
I wish you luck with your plans.
The Sirdar saluted.
If you ever need me, call my name to the east wind. The wind is my friend, and will send me your message,
he said earnestly, stepping out into the outer corridor where the torches had suddenly been extinguished.
May your god protect you.
And with that, he was gone. Almost too late, Ironheart remembered.
Where did you hear Balladil's story?
A friend told me,
came the answer out of the darkness.
The one you called the Growler. He claimed he was Tungdil's son.
The dwarf felt his blood run cold.
What?
He followed the Sirdar into the dark.
Is that true?
There was no answer. With a head full of thoughts, Boindil went back to his quarters. Some dwarves were leaving, carrying heavy boxes and wooden chests. The move was underway. Everything had been packed and was ready to go to its real home.
It's really a bit of a shame.
Ironheart was beginning to feel nostalgic and passed his hand over the granite of the walls. Evil Dam had been built according to his plans and had been home to him, his children, having grown up there.
I shall often come back, even if the journey is only in my mind.
He entered the room where his family was sitting with Coira, Millennia, and Rodario. His wife was talking with the Maegar, and waved him to come in as soon as she noticed him. Ironheart knew she had attended the funeral of Kiras, a swift and simple ceremony. He had not gone himself. The murderess of his best friend could expect neither pity nor respect.
Oh, have the Magi been dividing up Girdlegard?
He joked, putting casket and flask on the table. No, we shall live in peace and harmony with one another, Coira answered. We have decided that I shall use and guard the magic source in the former Alfar realm. I shall do this together with the two elves. It is regrettable, but I shall have to govern Weyen from a distance. Goda will protect the source in the Blue Mountains.
The new king of Goragar may not like that idea.
She will, said Millennia. The new king is going to be a queen.
You?
Ironheart bowed in her direction.
You have really earned it after so many cycles fighting for freedom. I offer my hearty congratulations, Queen Millennia. Is our actor friend going to be taking Eidoslane under his wing, perhaps?
He winked. No. I'm happy for her to reign in both those lands. I'm applying for Urgon, Rodario answered calmly. The assembly there is interviewing candidates. I'll address it on my way home. What with my heroic deeds and the legendary theatre tours I've undertaken, the throne should be in my pocket. Millennia and Koira both laughed at him. And he really believes it, the poor thing, the Ido woman teased.
Yes, I do, Rodario pouted. You'll see. I'll be ruler there.
In your dreams, or your next life, joked Koira. You should have enough on your plate, going to and fro between your two women. You wouldn't have time for such an important office. She put on a sad face. Or are you saying that we don't mean as much to you as a throne? Rodario burst out laughing.
If you ever get fed up with running a country and being a mager, you can always get a job in my theatre.
Millennia only grinned, one hand on the hilt of her sword. Let's go. Goda and Ironheart must have things to talk about. The two women and Rodario shook hands with the others and left.
The Longans are a strange lot, said Ironheart, kissing Goda on the forehead. Sometimes just the one of you is too much for me, but the actor wants to take on two women.
Goda grinned and sent the children out to help with the packing.
You will make a good king. Your children will support you.
She kissed him,
as I do.
Do you?
He blurted out the question. She started to reply, but instead stroked his silvery black hair.
It is the only issue we disagree on, dear husband. Kiras was right to do what she did.
Ironheart looked deep into her eyes.
You know I see things very differently. We won't mention it again.
He turned away, teeth clenched, so as not to say more, not to hurt her. He loved her too much for that. Ironheart heard her sigh and leave the room. Relieved to be alone with his thoughts, he turned to the table, where two items waited for his attention, the casket and the drinking pouch. He strode over, touching first the cool Vracasium and then the leather drinking vessel. He took his own flask out from under his chainmail and was disgusted to hear the black liquid inside swill thickly about.
It's this stuff that caused Tungdil's death. This, and the curse that rests on me.
Ironheart took his crow's beak, stepped over to the huge fireplace, and started to feed the blaze, putting log after log on the pile of burning wood until the flames rose high. He went over the events of recent orbits in his mind. So many of his questions would stay unanswered forever.
You and I shall meet again in the Eternal Forge. Then we shall have time to talk. I don't need to ask the Elf Goddess for mercy, he said quietly, throwing his own drinking pouch into the flames.
The heat scorched and blackened the leather, and the black liquid seeped out. When it touched the glowing wood, it bubbled away to dark smoke.
I am Boindil Doubleblade of the Clan of the Axe-Swingers, a child of the Smith, and King, from the tribe of Secondling Dwarfs.
He hurled the second vessel into the fire.
Fracas made us out of stone and gave us life. I will overcome the curse on my own, as true as I stand here.
He watched, fascinated, as the second vessel was devoured by the flames. Resting his hands on top of the crow's beak, he drew himself up tall and straightened his back, looking every inch the born ruler. Then he turned round and went back to the table, contemplating the Vracasium urn that shone in the reflected firelight, as if it had an inner strength. He placed a hand on it and felt its warmth.
I shall miss you, scholar, he whispered.
Then, picking up the urn, he left the room without looking round.
The Blue Mountains were waiting for their king.
Afterword. After the third volume, I was convinced I had finished Tungdil Goldhand's story. Well, Could I have guessed that what I considered the end of the matter would have aroused so much curiosity and so many requests for the saga to be continued? It certainly took me by surprise. 18 months of endless emails, all on the same topic. At readings, no matter which book I was reading from, people would ask about Volume 4, and people all wanted to know about that joke, which still has not been explained, and now never will be. There are some secrets that have to stay secret. This is the author's revenge. It was tremendous fun thinking up these new adventures and placing the old friends in fresh battles for the very last time. I am no fan of happy ends in the conventional sense. This ending is unambiguous, at least it is from my viewpoint. The dwarves have passed their final test and have earned peace and quiet. In order to forestall tons of emails asking about a possible 5th volume, I must emphasize, nothing is planned. Anyway, tetralogies are unusual enough. Another fine reason. What's next? The world of fantasy still has me in its grip, and the universe won't undergo any major change. It's the turn of the Alphar now. Evil demands the balance be redressed, and wants the right to report from its point of view. There are a few issues to bring to light. When this will all be ready to read or listen to, I cannot say at the moment. But the Alphar won't be patient for long. Although, I must admit it would be fun to write a whole series about a clumsy, fat, farting elf. This has been a Hachette Audio production of The Fate of the Dwarves. Written by Marcus Heitz. Translated by Sheila Alabaster. Read by Neil Dixon. Produced by Dennis Keogh. Directed by John Kovarik. Sound editing by Fred Koch. Mixing and mastering by Ian Lehman. Production supervised by Pavel Rivera. The Fate of the Dwarves is also available in print and digital formats from Orbit, an imprint of Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2008 by Piper Verlag GmbH Munich. English translation copyright 2012 by Sheila Alabaster. Audio production copyright 2019 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.